Welcome to PGA Live, the podcast. Our mission is simple. We want to spend time talking to interesting people about interesting topics. This podcast is not just for PGA members, it's for anybody who is interested in the game of golf. Without further ado, here's today's episode.
Hello and welcome to this PGA Live CPD podcast. In this episode, we speak to Australian PGA professional, Grant Field.
Very well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on, Grant. And before we talk about your many successes, and especially it must have been such a kind of fruitful year for you over the last 18 months, 12 months with your players and success you've had. But take us right back to the beginning. How did you first of all get into the game?
So like most people, my father played and was a member of a social club here in Australia, and just went out with him one day and tagged along, and as most of us do, as a caddy, and then decided to play. And within not too long, I was beating most of the guys in the social club, and just sort of went from there. So when I was roughly, I think, 12 when I first started playing golf, and back then it wasn't the coolest thing to do as a 12-year-old kid, but luckily I played rugby league at the same time, so kind of had a little bit of a balance there. But so I got into my golf, and again, at the time I was probably the only kid at my club that age. There was a few guys who are still mates of mine today who were a little bit older, who I sort of tagged along with once I got good enough to play with them, and then we've gone from there. So and then I started my traineeship at the age of 19, so pretty much a year out of school. I did a year working for my dad, and wanted to do a traineeship, and did a traineeship from age 19. So by the age of 20, 21, I was fully qualified, and I played for maybe a year. And just found that my passion was in coaching. I was always trying to help people when I was out there playing tournaments and that sort of stuff. And I was like, I'm crazy. I might as well go and do what I actually want to do, which is coach. So, so I started coaching very early on, full time, pretty much from, the age of 22, and, now I'm 45. So, so that's where
amazing,
we're at. So,
amazing journey. And for you at that time, did you have any kind of mentors in terms of coaches that you kind of like their style, their approach, or did you go in? Because we spoke to a lot of elite coaches, and they spoke about kind of going and seeing other coaches as well, and the importance of watching other coaches.
Absolutely. I was fortunate enough, at the club I was at early on, Mark Gibson, who's now a life member of the Australian PGA, was the club professional there, and he was my coach sort of through that, I guess, 16, 17, 18 year old time frame. And I used to love, like, I'd see him down there and I think that's a really cool thing to do, because I mean, for me, I've always just liked helping people, and that was kind of where my passion started. But I remember watching him coach, because he coached a lot for a club pro, and so he was kind of the first one where I looked at and went, that's actually something I think I'd really love to do. So that's where that started. And then like all of us, I watched heaps of guys coach, the guys that I looked up to and who at the time were, doing a great job. I traveled interstate to watch guys coach as well. So, to answer your question, that's where my early stuff really came from.
Did you have a certain, or do you now have a certain philosophy in your coaching? And what is there any tendencies that you like to see in a player?
Look, I think we all have tendencies we like to see. I don't like to think that I pigeonhole myself into doing, one thing, so to speak. I think, the art of coaching is helping the person in front of you. And I guess, over a long period of time, you develop that toolbox of different ways to help people. So it doesn't mean that I don't have things that I prefer to see, but I also think I understand what goes with what a lot better than maybe I did 20 odd years ago. There's been times where I sort of, I wouldn't say was full on into certain things, but I definitely had, this is the way it is to be done. And then I quickly got out of that once I realized I couldn't help as many people. So, definitely, to answer your question, I do have preferences, but I wouldn't say that I have a hard and fast, you know, this is the only way it can be done.
And we've talked about with a lot of kind of world-class coaches like yourself, that the use of technology and potentially sometimes the overuse of technology. What's your thoughts around the use of technology when you're coaching?
Look, you know, same as a lot of people, I think early on used it a lot more, but I always had, you know, let's just use something like TrackMan, you know, sitting in the background. I never used it for every swing, and I still use it the same way at times, depending on what I need. And I think, look, they're just information devices. I think, you know, they're giving us information. They're not showing us how to coach. They're not telling us, you know, like I've heard people sort of, you know, poo-hoo technology. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just information, you know, and how you decide to use that information is totally up to you. You know, we've got a guy that we use, Ryan Lumsden, through Golf Australia, who's fantastic. He's a biomechanist, and you know, but again, it's knowing what the player needs and what we want to use there, and then the same as with any of the technology. So I think if it adds value and helps the player, you know, then it's fantastic. But I also think there's definitely people who go to it, and I've seen, you know, too many people that are trying to fix numbers rather than understanding how to improve those numbers. You know, they're trying to change numbers without knowing what to do, so to speak. So,
yeah. And for you with your players, what's the balance between the kind of practice ground, practice tee to golf course? Do you like to see your players in action on the golf course kind of rather than on the practice tee?
Oh, massively. I mean, I think it depends what you know, you're trying to get out of the sessions and that sort of stuff. So, you know, if it is some sort of you know, maintenance or, you know, some skill development, then obviously, you know, we're probably better off on the range. But if it's game development and, you know, developing sort of more tools, then definitely want to see them out on the golf course. And, you know, because I think there are so many variables that we just don't create standing on a tee block. So, you know, I'm really big on, you know, understanding, you know, where they teared up, to what shape they hit, to certain hole shapes and certain wind conditions and things like that. And you just can't recreate that without getting on the course, because, you know, so many times I'll see a player who, you know, will flush four in a row and they'll get to a certain hole shape and they'll quick hook it or they'll block it way right, and you go, okay, well, let's talk about why, you know. And a lot of times for me, it's, you know, got to do with the environment rather than the technique. So it's like, you know, they might have, you know, a fairway that's to the right of them, curving to the left with wind out of the left, or it might be, you know, there might be, and then they teed up in the wrong side of the tee block and try and hit a shape that doesn't fit that hole. So, you know, you can't do that if you're not out on the golf course with them. So, I like to get out there, you know, as much as possible, and obviously see them in tournaments. I see so many of those patterns from all players, you know. So a lot of times I'll see them tee up and I'll think, oh God, here we go, you know, because I know what's coming. So, you know, and that's good, because you can have that conversation, and it's not a technical thing that's got to change. It's you know, an understanding of what their tendencies are.
Yeah. And with that, I know you've got such a varied kind of client base. How do you manage kind of a coaching an elite player at 1 minute on the PGA Tour to coaching a complete beginner or amateur golfer?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, I always look at, you know, how do I help the person in front of me, you know? So, and I see every player as like a big puzzle, you know. It's like, what pieces need to go together to help that person, you know? And sometimes with people, it's got nothing to do with their golf, you know. Sometimes it's just helping them with their everyday life and understanding, you know, things that are going on and how you can influence that. And then other times it's purely just golf swing stuff. Sometimes it's, you know, a number of different things. So I think, you know, like I said, I always just look at it as a big puzzle, and I'm trying to, you know, complete or help put together that puzzle, you know, and then from there, you know, unfortunately the puzzle changes a lot. So, you know, how do we keep managing those pieces? But, you know, the big thing for me is, like I said, I just, you know, how do I help the person in front of me?
And I know from doing the research for today's session that you've had massive success developing juniors into real elite to kind of PGA Tour players. How did that come about? Yeah. Has that always been a passion of yours, junior golf and junior development?
Look, I think, again, you know, I think it started out like, I've, you know, and still to this day, like I said, I just like to help people, you know, and I just ended up having good relationships with younger players who wanted to move forward, you know. So I was sort of, you know, really engaged by helping anybody that wanted to get better and who was going to, you know, put in the work to get better. And I think I sort of, it just sort of gravitated more to that. And then obviously the better we did, the more people turned up, and then the more people turned up, the more that, you know, that's kind of what became my thing. And I think sometimes, you know, I'll get members around the club will go, oh, you know, that I'd love to have a lesson with you, but I know you only do this. And it's like, well, no, I don't. I actually, you know, I'm happy to do, you know, whatever, you know, and help, you know, whoever I can. But definitely, you know, like I think most of us do enjoy seeing that long-term benefit rather than just, you know, standing on the tee for half an hour and then not seeing somebody again.
Yeah. And is that something, I didn't even think of that, to be honest. People would be kind of worried about coming to have a session with you because you're only an elite level coach or perceived to be elite level coach.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I get it a lot where, you know, I've had people go, oh, you know, I would, you know, or they've said, you know, I'll start with this person, then I'll come and see you when I get better. And I'm thinking, you know, like, it's like I quite, you know, that they're not good enough to come. And it's like, that's, you know, in my mind, it's crazy, right? It's like, you know, I've been doing this for over 20 odd years, and you know, I've taught players of, you know, from the age of 3 to, you know, 88 or 90, you know, like, so I think in that time I've developed a reasonable bag of trips to be able to, you know, help most people that stand in front of me, that's for sure.
Yeah, and with that in mind, I think missing members would kind of berate me if I didn't talk about a certain Cameron Smith. And I know you've worked with Cameron for a long time, since he was 10 years old. How has that evolution been, and how has that journey gone?
Yeah, well, you know, as it turns out, I'm glad that he walked into my life, that's for sure. So, look, he was a member of, so up on the Sunshine Coast, he lives, or when he's home, he lives in sort of North Brisbane, and which is about, I guess, 50 minutes from where I am. And we had a squad. It was a local sort of junior development squad, and he was brought into that as a 10-year-old, and I think we had 9 kids. We had 3 players per coach, so there was 3 coaches, obviously. And he was just put in my group, and you know, we did the couple of days of coaching, and then the next year he came back, and his dad sort of said, you know, I think he's ready for a bit more, you know, permanent one-on-one coaching. He really likes you. Are you happy to coach him? And yeah, sure, you know, no problem. So kind of started from there. And you know, he was obviously a good little player back then, you know, at 10 years of age, playing off a handicap of maybe 10 or 11, something like that. And then, you know, got better, but it wasn't probably till about 13 or 14 where I was like, okay, this kid's different, you know, like he's proper good. And I knew probably about that 14, 15 that, you know, basically I had to get a lot better if I was going to do the journey with him. Because I was already coaching some pros and some good players, but I just knew that he was going to be, you know, better. And like I said, I needed to upskill, basically, was, or I had to, you know, pass him on to somebody, to do the job. So I went to work on, you know, working on my own skills and trying to get better and being able to take him to, you know, obviously, you know, he's a top 30 player in the world and, yeah, going pretty good.
Yeah, so, exactly that. Yeah. We spoke to Cameron McCormack about his relationship with Jordan Spieth, and he talked about there was just kind of little moments and special golf shots that Jordan hit that made him kind of go, wow, like you said, this kid is special. Was it the same with Cam?
Oh, no question. You know, I've seen, so it started early on when we had that squad originally, and we'd do short games and, you know, competitions and that sort of stuff. And he would religiously beat the kids that were 16, 17. And, you know, he'd hit, you know, and obviously Cam's quite known for his short game. But he'd hit certain shots where you'd go, that's pretty impressive. And then as he developed, you know, into, you know, a good young amateur, and like he'd win stuff or he'd hit certain shots at the right time. And I never forget one of the ones that stands out to me the most, and just was actually in his first PGA Tour event, which was at the CIMB Classic in Malaysia. And I mean, he's hit heaps of shots that I look at and just go, that's phenomenal. And, you know, but this one, so he was sort of, I think, so basically he, I don't know if people know the backstory, but basically he went to the US Q School and he missed his tee off time. He actually missed the days and he got the day wrong. And he was there warming up and we'd send him messages in the morning, mate, all the best, you know, for, and he was sort of thinking, what are you, you know, like it doesn't start till, you know, for another 2 days yet. And it actually started on the Tuesday and he was thinking on the Thursday. Anyway, so he missed his, anyway, so he came back home, he went to the Asian Tour School and got his tour card through Asia and he played. So we set a goal of getting into the top 10 for the CIMB Classic. So the top 10 players at that point get into the CIMB Classic. Anyway, so he had a number of top 10s and fortunately got in on the last number, actually through Scott Hend, not playing enough rounds, but anyway, he got into the top 10 and then our goal was to run top 10 and try and get to web.com playoffs for the year. So with about four holes to go, he's running eighth and, you know, like there's a fair bit on the line. Anyway, hits it over the back of this par three and he's sort of in the rough and it's sort of over this little sort of knob down, all downhill to the pin. And I'm looking at it thinking, we're in a bit of trouble here. Like this is a pretty tough shot. And, anyway, he gets in there, lays it flat and starts making this practice swing. And I'm like, holy crap, and he hits this shot that lips out and goes to 2 inches. And I just sort of hand him the putter because I was caddying that week and handing the putter and it's like, nice shot, mate. And, you know, just sort of moved on. And I'm thinking, my God, like, that was, you know, one of the ballsiest shots I've ever seen. And at the moment that he had to hit it, he hit it. And he's done that a number of times. I think most people sort of saw the three wood that he hit at Chambers Bay at the US Open to, you know, to a foot or something. And you know, which then got him basically his tour card for the year, got him into the Masters the following year and so on, you know, had to hit the shot and hit it to a foot. And so he's done that a bit. But in saying that, there's been a couple of times where he's, you know, hasn't hit the shot when he's needed to. And, but it doesn't stop him from backing, you know, like he'll face it head on. Anytime there's the opportunity to go for it, he'll hit the shot. So yeah, it's there's definitely something different with the mindset of those guys, that's for sure.
Yeah, you touched on earlier there about kind of you going away and doing some learning in preparation to coach a player of Cam's level and the many of your stable that you've got now on that kind of rise to tour level. Was there anything in particular that you went away and learned or you felt you needed to develop?
I just think, you know, especially from a high performance point of view, just diving deeper into every area and making sure I was across, you know, like for a better term, sort of filled my knowledge buckets in a lot of different areas. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, being able to go to events with him a lot more at that early stage. And then obviously now with my role with Golf Australia and that, you know, spending more time at events and being able to help, you know, just across the board in a number of different ways than just, you know, helping with his golf swing sort of thing. So nothing specific. I mean, obviously, you know, like most people, I went to all the coaching summits and that sort of stuff. I was fortunate enough to one of the big things that did change for me, Ken was about 15 and he spent he got a session organised with Ramsey McMasters. I think a lot of you guys know of Ramsey quite well. And I went to this session and he basically said to Cam, you know, look, if your coach wants to come, you know, by all means. And I was like, well, I'm not missing out on this. Like, this is a world-class physio who's, you know, does an amazing job. And, you know, he's invited me down. So I went down and during the session, I didn't realise, but he was testing me. And he basically... you know, he said, show me where you want to get him and what you like here. And I moved. Anyway, about an hour after the session, I get this email from Ramsey saying, there's a Golf Australia camp next week in Melbourne. You can stay at my house. Can you make it? And I went home to my wife and I said, I've got to go to Melbourne next week. You know, and at the time, like I just, you know, we probably didn't have the funds for me to fly to Melbourne and spend a couple of days, but it was just like, I've just got to go. And I jumped on a plane and went down there, and then Ramsey introduced me to all sorts of players, you know, Stuart Leong, who does shots to hole and does an amazing job. And Stuart came over the first night and, you know, we spent 6 hours talking stats and that sort of stuff. And then Kevin Kirk, who, you know, a lot of guys know, used to work with Patrick Reed and Jonathan Vegas and a few others. And, you know, Kevin was out from America, and then he just introduced me to a much wider circle of coaches for me to then be able to sort of learn from and to know and to speak to and that sort of stuff. So that moment for me was pretty huge in the fact that he just kind of, and I said to him later, you know, why did you, you know, and he said, well, you passed the smell test. He said, you know, there's so many guys that have got these credentials and I've asked these questions to, and they just can't answer for me. He said, you could. And he said, so, you know, basically he brought me into the stable, so to speak, and that sort of stuff. And yeah, so that was really a huge moment for me in accessing that next level of sort of coach development, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely superb. And for you, you must be so proud as a coach to see what Cam's continued to do, but in particular over probably the last 2 years, and then kind of post pandemic, we've seen that kind of into the Masters in November. And what do you think's made such a difference in his game to take it to the level he has done now?
Look, I don't think there's a massive difference in what he's done. I think we've stayed true to what we do, and known that he's just going to keep getting better at what he does, you know. So we're not really introducing stuff that we haven't done for a long, long time. He's just got better at it, which is just, you know, time on task, so to speak, and being in that moment a bit more. And so it's not like it's new stuff. We've been doing a lot of the same stuff for a long, long time, and I think obviously he's really comfortable in that space now, and knows that he's world class and knows that he's more than good enough. One of the things that Cam is very good at as well is his time away from the course. You know, he's very good at switching off and realizing that he can leave golf alone, and then when it's time to be back on, he's fully invested. And he does that probably better than anybody I've ever come across, is his ability just to, like, he doesn't attach himself to him as a golfer, like it's just something that he does, and obviously he does pretty well. But he's also good at, you know, when he's away from that, you know, being with his mates and going fishing and all the things that he enjoys doing, which I think really helps him on the on weeks be able to be really invested in what he does.
Yeah. And how's that balance with you in terms of your time that you spend with him? Or do you do a lot of kind of FaceTime stuff or Zoom?
So basically the way we work now, so obviously when there was travel back in the
good old, you know, days,
the long ago, I used to go probably six times a year to the States. At the moment, our sort of setup is that generally Monday, if he does a bit of practice, he doesn't do a lot. So his caddy will send me some swings. We'll have a session Tuesday without fail, basically. Sometimes it's 10 minutes, sometimes it's an hour. So it just depends on what it needs to be. But we make sure we have that constant check-in and just stay on top of, you know, because we've been doing it for so long. It's not like, as I said before, we're not creating new structures or, you know, things that we're working on. And so it's like, you know, I see my job now more so as insurance for Cam, you know, and maintenance. And you know, like I said, so whether we need to touch on anything on the Tuesday, we will. And then again, you know, his caddy will do some video and send some video through post that. And then, you know, if we need to do more work during the week, we will. If not, you know, we'll sort of leave it till the following week. And then, it seems to be working pretty well. I mean, he's had, you know, he's actually just about every stat this year has got better than it was last year, which is a real positive given the landscape. And the fact that I can't travel. But I think he also has a real belief in what we do. You know, I think he really trusts that, okay, if I just stay, you know, and sometimes that's hard because, you know, people are always looking to get better, right? So they think they've got to do different stuff, whereas we're pretty comfortable in what we do. And the more he does it, the better he gets at it, you know, and then we're just really refining the edges of how he needs to get better. I mean, I think people ask me all the time, oh, what do you need to do to get better? And it's like, well, he doesn't need to do a lot, you know, quarter of a shot, and he's probably, you know, one of the best five players on the planet. So, you know, if he just keeps, you know, consistent with his effort and keeps working hard and keeps putting himself in position, you know, I don't see any reason why he's not a top 10 player in the next year or so.
Yeah, I think I think what key what you said there is he looks like he belongs on the tour. He looks very comfortable in the tour environment and everything around him.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, he's such a great competitor as well. Like, I think as like you hear all the time about his short game, but you know, his long game is more than adequate to play on that tour, and it's still, you know, above average and that sort of stuff. And I think because originally he did need to rely on his short game, you know, when he first went out on tour, but he was also a 20-year-old kid who kind of looked like he was 12. So, you know, like, whereas now he's grown into, you know, hitting the ball further, and you know, he understands his game better, and then when you combine that with, you know, an amazing short game and amazing competitiveness and, you know, a really good golf mind and all these other things that we don't visually see, you know, he's a pretty damn good golfer.
Yeah, is that, do you think that's a misconception as well, when people work with elite players and tour level players, that you're working on really complex things, where you just said you're maintaining the golf swing? You can't rip up the copybook and start again every week, because these guys are making a living.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, and the thing is too, you know, they do so much really well, you know, and at different times, there's different things that need maintenance. I always sort of look at it like, you know, when you see the circus performer juggling the dinner plates, you know, and then one's spinning beautifully, but this one over here starts to wobble a little bit, then they try and get it spinning a bit better, and then, you know, it spins better, but this one starts to wobble over here. You know, that's kind of our job, right, is that a lot of times we're just trying to keep those dinner plates from crashing on the ground and making sure they spin as efficiently as they can. So, and like you said, you know, it's very hard to get an off season too now. You know, if there was something that you really wanted to hammer away at, you know, like normal conditions, Cam comes home and plays 3 or 4 weeks in Australia, doesn't give us a lot of time. But in saying that, like I said, he's already, you know, better than world class. You know, so where do you know what? I think sometimes in the effort to find this improvement, we actually make things a lot worse. You know, and I think, you know, with high performance, we're always looking for that edge, but sometimes we just make the recipe so hard that they actually don't get better, you know. So for me, if I'm ever going to add something, I really need to believe that it's going to make it better. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like the distance debate at the moment. There's no question that being longer is more efficient. You know, is your ceiling is higher, you know, with how good you can get. If you hit one more loose shot around, then it's of no value, you know, and then at what cost does it happen to something else, you know? So for somebody like Cam, who's, you know, a great wedge player, a great iron player, do you then, you know, does it have an effect on that for little gain, you know, back on the tee box? So you've got to weigh up, you know, kind of what the cost ratio is. If you're going to do something, does it affect something else that's already, you know, a massive strength, and then you've actually undone all the good work you've done previously, so to speak.
Yeah. And again, something that you've gone into is the training aid market. I know you've worked with another kind of high level PGA professional, Rich Woodhouse, in terms of developing training products with Nick Steiner. How did that come about?
So basically, I've got a mate who lives close by, and I'd done putting mirrors for years, and then it sort of got to the stage where we were like, okay, well, we need, you know, we want to have the arc in the putting mirror, and, you know, how do we design that? And then I got sort of talking to Rich, and I said, what do you think about this? And then we said, we're going to, you know, sort of do that together. And then originally I just had a mate, you know, producing the product, and then Nick is a student of Rich's, and then they got talking, and then we sort of went from there. And I think we've developed a really good product, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I think all the reports are really positive, and I think people love using it. So, you know, as I said, for me, I think the first putting mirror I did with this mate of mine was probably 15 years ago. So, it's been a long journey, and probably something, you know, I was never going to, you know, take to market or spend the time in doing. So when Nick came along, you know, it was a perfect fit for all of us, because, you know, he did a great job of making the product better and packaging up better, and, you know, just the whole thing is just a better product. And so it sort of fits really well. So
are you somebody who uses kind of training aids within your coaching anyway, and have you got any favorites in particular?
Yeah, I do. And you know, the putting mirror, without the risk of sounding like I'm selling it, but, you know, I think I'm really big on the more, you know, kind of calm you can create in this chaotic game that we have, you know. And so for me, you know, something like the putting mirror for somebody like, even, you know, say with most of the players I teach, and Cam's a good example of this, the first thing he'll do is put the putting mirror on the ground when he gets to a putting green. So he's not using it, you know, a lot of times to develop the skill. He's doing it to check in, you know, am I set up properly? Is my alignment properly? Am my shoulder alignment? Is the path online? Am I, you know, striking the ball out of the middle? Blah, 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 you know. So it becomes a great tool for just reassuring the player that I'm doing the right things. You know, I don't have to look for a new answer. It's like, these are the things that I do, and if I do them well, you know, and especially in somebody like Cam's case, as I'm one of the best putters on the planet, you know, I just got to keep doing more and more of it. And like you said before, you know, I think people think, you know, we're looking for some amazing, you know, secret that's out there. It's not. It's just really simple stuff that they do a really good job of a lot, you know. So, yeah, I use a whole, you know, I wouldn't say I use, you know, every teaching aid known to man, but the ones that make sense, I use like the Gravity Fit T-Pro, a bit. I'll use the smart ball a bit, things like that, you know, in my coaching. Obviously, you know, there's a number of others that come and go that we use at times. I'll use speed sticks for different things, you know, sometimes not just for the speed stuff, but for sequencing. I find that I, you know, get a good feel out of the sequencing when we use the speed sticks, but also for the speed aspect as well at times. So yeah, so it depends on, again, what the player needs and what I think is the best fit, you know, for what they need.
Yeah, so. And hopefully we've got out there a lot of trainees who will access this session today. Is there any advice that you'd kind of pass on and think some of the learnings that you've taken from your career to date?
Yeah, I think, I think we live in an age where people can tell the world that they're experts when they're actually not. And you know, I think, you know, coaching a lot, and you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but, you know, again, you're trying to get better each and every time that you give a lesson. And I think, you know, going, like you said, going and watching good players coach and looking at things that resonate with you, and not always is it going to be, you know, I think there's a tendency for a lot of guys to go, oh, I went and watched him and I'm going to do everything that he does. You know, and it's like, well, okay, well, what do I actually like? What resonates with me, you know, whether it be in his delivery, whether it be in some of the ways that he coached, and then, you know, go and see somebody else that's like really different. You know, I think too often we kind of, like life, we're drawn to people that are like us, right? You know, whereas we're actually going to learn a lot more from people that probably aren't like us, you know? So I think if you can, you can spread your wings and go and see people, even people that, you know, somebody might say, oh, no, he's not that great, or, you know, if they've had success with players, they're doing something right, you know, and there's something that you can learn from those guys. But I would say coach a lot, you know, go and watch a lot of coaches. You know, you don't need to stick everything out online to be a good coach. Not that there's not, you know, like online is now definitely a model, you know, and I use Skillist for a lot of my online coaching as well. And I think, you know, it's a great tool, and it's actually worked a lot better than I ever thought it could. You know, the successes that we're getting, you know, with online learning is excellent. But I think, you know, passing yourself off as as an expert at something because you went to a seminar or a, you know, doesn't quite cut it. And I think, like I said before, you know, go and coach lots and make some mistakes and get better and go and watch good coaches coach and just head down, bum up, basically.
Amazing. So. Grant, superb. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and wish you all the very best for the coming season and beyond. Thank you, sir.
Not a problem, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Super. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening, for watching, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe on your preferred platform so that you never miss an episode. If you have any suggestions for improvements, topics or guests, please email pgalive@pga.org.uk.